Over the past few summers, we've been zeichet to learn together different shiurim shmuzen from a very, very remarkable tzaddik and a dear friend of mine, Reb Tzvi Meir Silberberg from Yerushalayim. And there's much, much more to do from his teachings. But there was something that I wanted to do. There's a tzaddik, really, he doesn't write his name in any of his svarim. I happen to know his name because there's some inside information that's a couple of chevra got, but it's a young man in Eretz Yisrael who last August, around Elul time, he came out with a sefer called Bavavi Mishkan Evna. Some of you might have heard of this. I've been learning this with the women in the shul this past year, a small sefer, Bavavi Mishkan Evna, a small sefer that has a big Rabbi Mishalom hidden in it. And it's made, that sefer, when it came out, made such an unbelievable reishim. Rabbi Avram Shur from Brooklyn brought in through somebody 5,000 copies to be given out to people of Bilvavi Mishkan Evna, and they're learning that sefer in Chaburas throughout the world. Subsequently, he came out, the same Mechaber came out with four other svarim this past year. Some of them are Kabbalah, and some of them are for regular people like us. And this sefer, Shni Tola'as, is the one that came out after Bilvavi Mishkan Evne. It's hard to describe how unique these svarim are, how clearly written they are, how sweet and simple and straightforward and how important they are for us. Without learning them, it's hard to explain. We just have to begin to learn. There are two parts to the sefer. The first part is what we're going to be focusing on. The first part of the sefer is dealing with establishing a kesher, a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. We're going to be talking about very, very simple, straightforward things. Establishing a kesher with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. The whole year, and I mentioned this on Shabbos, the whole year was so busy with so many things. Even now, there are so many people that are going back and forth. It should be only for Simchas. But it's hard to have Yishuv Hadas. In the summer, a little bit more, we have some time, and we can work on certain things. And we're going to begin with a tiny little mimer and then go back to the beginning. We're going to begin on page Kuf Ayin Vav. The second part of the sefer consists of small mamarim, short shmuz and sichas that he gave on Kuf Ayin Vav. And then we're going to return to the introduction to the sefer. The reason that I want to begin here is because it really has in it, in this little mimer on Kuf Ayin Vav, mimer Mem Gimel, the tzaddik here really is telling us what is it that the sefer is all about and what is it that we could try to do together. There was a maisa that I saw a couple of weeks ago. First, I heard it from a friend of mine, and he told me where to see this maisa. Here, this farm here, and I wanted to tell this maisa as a way of beginning. There's a maaseh from the Satmar Rav Zchus Yagen Aleinu. Now, when the Satmar Rav came to America, Satmar then wasn't like it is now. It wasn't a large island in Williamsburg at that time. Somebody even told me, a cousin of mine mentioned that he heard that there were times when the Rebbe was looking for minyan on the street. I don't know how that's possible, but it certainly was not the way it is now. And the Satmar Rav, after the Milchama, after the war, when he came to Williamsburg, he announced that there was going to be a Gemara Shir. And the Gemara Shir was attended by Sheiris HaPleita, Jews who, like the Rebbe himself, were survivors who went through all the Madura Gehenim in the war. And because she managed to come to America, most of them missing large parts of their family, and they came to the Gemara Shir. It said around 8-9 Jews came to the Gemara Shir. You can imagine, Satmar Rav gave a Shir, 8-9 people came. And the Rebbe, everybody had their Gemaras, their new Gemaras, and they sat down and they opened the Gemaras. And for the first couple of Shirim, and continued on for the first week or two, the Rebbe never even got to the Gemara. He would sit down and he would start to ask Yankel, what happened with that job that you went? Did you get that job? And the other one he had asked, and you, Shmerel, did you hear from your brother? Did he Taka make it through the war? You know, he was talking to the island. He was shmoozing with the chevra. And it was batali, but they weren't learning. And this was going on for the first couple of, a good couple of shiurim. And finally, after the shiur, one of these Jews came to the Satmar Rebbe, and he said, Rebbe, in all due respect, what's with the Gemara? You know, we want to have a Gemara shiur. We can't learn Gemara. And the Rebbe's schmoozing. You know. So the Satmar said, he asked him this, he said, you know, what page does every Gemara start with? You know, what page does a Gemara start with? Not that you looked in a Gemara ever, but what page does the Gemara start with? It starts with that base. It doesn't start with page one. There's no such thing as page one in the Gemara. It starts with page two. Even in the art scroll, it starts with page two. There's no such thing as page one in any Gemara. So they usually say, because you should know that you didn't even start learning. But the Satmar Rebbe asked this Jew, he said, tell me, why does it start with page two? How come it doesn't start with page one? So he said, I don't know, Rebbe, why? So Satmar Rebbe said this. It made a tremendous ratio on me. Satmar Rebbe said, there is a page one. I'll tell you what the page one is. He says, page one is when a Jew sits down with other Yidden, and he sees that these Yidden, each one is Tzibrochen, and each one is barely able to pull himself to get to the Shia, and has gone through so much, and has lost so much. You know what page one, he says, Daf Aleph is to ask a Yid, how you doing, how you feel, did you get the job, did you hear from your wife? That's Daf Aleph. There's a Daf Aleph. And I was thinking when I saw that mice, which touched me very, very much, the Rebbe was concerned with that Daf Aleph. And I was thinking, Baruch Hashem, there are many, many wonderful teachers, Rebbeim, Moros, and parents who know how to teach from Daf Beis and on, right? They know how to teach from Daf Beis, but Daf Aleph is a very, very, very hard thing, Daf Aleph. Daf Aleph is a big chachma, that Daf Aleph that's not in print, right? The Daf Aleph that you can't look up, it's not part of a curriculum. The Daf Aleph that they don't send out notices from the BJE and have exams. That Daf Aleph, the generation is desperately in need of Daf Aleph, even though, thank God, this generation that we're in now, we're not survivors, God forbid, of such a thing that our parents went through. But in many, many ways, the children in yeshiva and ourselves, in different ways, not God forbid physically chalila, but in many, many ways we're missing Daf Aleph, and we're waiting for somebody to learn with us Daf Aleph. And that's why when I first saw the Bilvavi Mishkan Evne, and then I started to learn the Svarm of this Mechaber, of this Tzaddik, so I began to feel that here's a Jew that's talking about Daf Aleph, and how and we all need that very, very much. The boys in yeshiva, we've spoken about this over the years, the boys in yeshiva, Daf Beis, Daf Gimel, Daf Dalet, and they're learning all kinds of pilpulim, all kinds of things about Hilchas Shabbos, and they're learning all different things about Nezik and Chayshah Mishpat, if you find a lost object of a person, what do you do, and so on. But what do you do if you yourself are a lost object, yeah? That we're not hearing, we weren't taught. And sometimes we have to go through many things in life to come to that point where we're able to understand Daf Aleph and to hear Daf Aleph. So I'm confident that, and I've seen this over the Sarmas, over the years, that there's a very strong chevi here that we can learn these things together and to have some Yishuv Hadas. So even though we're starting on page Kuf Ayin Vav, let's consider it Daf Aleph. And let's learn this little mimer here. And then we'll go back to the introduction of the Sefer. So everybody has it on Kuf Ayin Vav? Try to remember to bring, if you're able to come back next week is going to be Tuesday, Mr. Shemol, so we have a Chasna Monday night. So it'll be Tuesday. Try to remember to bring the Sefer with you, if you're able to come. Oyel Meloshon Helen, Kosev Ramchal, on the bottom of page Kuf Ayin Vav. Kosev Ramchal, the Sifrei Mesil Sishar. The first sentence of the Mesil Sishar, I mentioned on Shabbos, Mizel l'shayni, yisoy ha-chasidus, v'shorish ha-avayda ha-tmima. You know that many mechaber, many authors of Svarm, they try to put Hashem's name at the beginning of the Sefer. So you see how the Ramchal begins with the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, right? Yisoy yud ha-chasidus, v'shorish ha-avayda is Hashem's name. The foundation of righteousness and the root of pure worship, of pure service of Hashem, yisoy ha-chasidus, v'shorish ha-avayda ha-tmima. Who she is bara v'yis ameis etzel ha'adam ma'chevasa be'olama. the Yesod of Hasidus, the foundation of righteousness, and the root of serving Hashem in a pure and simple way, is what? She is a barrier that it should become clear, vis ames, and should be true, confirmed as true, to a person. What is his obligation, his responsibility in the world? There's a very, very famous sentence, but it's oftentimes read quickly, to the first sentence in the Sefer, in Mesil Zeshar. So he explains, Ha'olam nikra olam, milashon helam kenayda. The world is called olam. Why is it called olam? Chazal already told us that the word olam, world, comes from the word he'elam, or ne'elam, when something is hidden, something is missing. Sha'olam, he says, Ha'olam nikra olam, milashon helam kenayda, because the Ramchal l'kam, and the Ramchal writes further ahead in Mesil Zeshar, Sha'olam, this world is referred to many times in Tanakh and in Chazal as a world of darkness. Alma de Chashuch. So the Ramchal explains that the world is dark. Because of the darkness of the world, there are two major errors that result from this darkness. There are two major problems that are the outcome of the darkness. Aleph, Shalei Royim Klal, Ramchal says. We don't see at all. Not to see at all. Bechlal, not to see. When it's dark, a person might not see anything. And Beis, Shalei Mitzura, She'enana Brura. Ramchal says, another thing that could happen in the darkness is that you might see something, but it might be a couch that looks like a monster, right? Children see all kinds of things in the darkness that they mistake one thing for another thing, they become very frightened what that is. So there are two things that happen in darkness. One is you can't see it all. Sometimes it's just totally black, you can't see a thing. The second is that you see something, but you have a totally obscured and a totally skewed way of seeing that. It's just not what it looks like is. Tafkid ha'odam ba'ilomo. The responsibility, our tafkid, our achrayis, our job in this world, l'salek shnei minei choshech v'helem elu. That sums up all of life. That the Ramchal begins with that sentence. Man's responsibility in this world is to somehow to be misalek, to remove in the course of our lives both of the effects of darkness. A, not seeing, and B, seeing things in a very convoluted or distorted way. Reishis al ha'adam lirais. The first thing is to see. Reishis al ha'adam lirais. To be able to see. Klema, what does that mean to see? Klema lirais be'ene sichlai. It doesn't mean, he's not talking about 20/20 vision when it comes to our eyes. But lirais be'ene sichlai. To be able to see with the eyes of one's mind. Be'ene sichlai. Ulahavin, and to understand. Sheyesh tachlis libriya. But there's a tachlis to the world. There's a tachlis to our being in this world. V'yesh tachlis, and it's not only that Hashem had some tachlis in mind 5,765 years ago when He created the world, but v'yesh tachlis l'chol ma'isi dibu machshava shalai, that there's a tachlis to the creation of each and every one of us. On Shabbos we were talking a little bit about that. Each person has his own world and was put into his own, into that family, into that time, into that city, in that place, and so on, with those friends. That whole world, that olam of a person, is a tachlis to each and every one of our lives. And in our lives, l'chol maise, every single act, there's a tachlis to every single thing that a person, to see means to see that there's a tachlis in everything that you're doing, dibur, in every word that you speak, in every thought that you have. There's a tachlis. While you were given the ability to live, to act, that's a maise, to speak is dibur, machshava, to think. When a person is able, kaidim kol, to see, and to recognize, to realize this, that there's a tachlis to the Bria. And we're going to learn throughout the Sefer, knowing that it doesn't mean something intellectual. It doesn't mean just that I know that. Every one of us knows that the Rebbeinu Shlomo had a tachlis in making the world. And any one of us knows that there's some tachlis to our lives. But as he's going to explain in a minute, it's not enough to know that intellectually. It's a question of living with that thought. When a person understands this, when a person sees this and it's clear to him that there's a reason for the creation of the world and there's a reason why he was created, that he wants to understand what's the tachlis of my life, what's the tachlis of what I'm doing, of what I'm saying, of what I'm thinking. With doing that, a person is able to repair or to dispel that first level of he'elem, of concealment that this world consists of, meaning that absolute darkness that doesn't allow you to see anything at all. So number one, Aleph, is to see. And seeing means to believe be'emunah shleima, that each and every one of us has a tachlis. And the Rebbeinu Shlom created each and every one of us with a specific tachlis. And to try to understand it through the course of our lives. What is the tachlis of my ma'isim, my machshavos, my dibur, my machshavos? La'achar shetikun ha'adam shlav zeh, after working on that, now a lot of this is going to be discouraging, because what do you mean after working? So that's just like skipped over 85 years. So it doesn't mean that we've perfected any of this. It means we're thinking about it, we're trying to work on it. Having spent some time trying to work on this and remembering this and thinking about this during the course of a day, which we're going to learn about at the beginning of the Sefer, when we start the Sefer, when we go back to the beginning, to become conscious of this throughout the day. That actually that not even a half hour should pass where a person doesn't think about his tachlis in life. That there's a bayir element, that there's a creator, and that he created us for a tachlis. We have to then begin to work on the second type of darkness, which means a distorted vision, seeing things in an incorrect way. We're able to see. In other words, a person acknowledges that there's a tachlis. It's just that his way of looking at his tachlis and his way of looking at life is so completely distorted. It's not clear. Tafkid ha'adam la'agir la'matzav shechai v'yu b'b'chines olam boru. The tachlis and the tafkid of a person's life is to come to a point where his life, his world, is called in the Lashon of Chazal an olam boru, a clear world. He has a clear purpose in his life, and it's clear to him what he needs to do. Yediyas hadvarim b'tzura she'enena brura. When something is unclear, knowing something, but in a way that's unclear, einem is yashavas alev ha'adam. It doesn't settle in a person's heart. Umemela ein ha'adam magish mechuyaveis pnimis nafshis lekaima. And if something if your purpose is not clear to you, and if you don't see an olam boru, a clear world, and have mapped out for yourself a clear purpose in your life, then the fact that you know certain things, but your knowledge of them is unclear and unstable, then that knowledge does not generate within a person any real, deep, compelling reason to live a certain way. In other words, Lamashal, we're not going to talk about them now. There are 13 fundamental principles of Jewish faith. There are 13 Ikarim. We know them from, some say them it's in the Siddur, some say in Yigdal, the 13 Ikarim. These are the basic principles of Emunah. God forbid, if we're lacking any of these principles, then we're not, our Yiddishkeit is not just that it's incomplete, the Yiddishkeit is just kind of Yiddishkeit. And yet, if we were to ask ourselves to go through the 13 Ikarim, just list the 13 Ikarim, I won't do that. It would be embarrassing for most from Jews to just say the 13 Ikarim and to take out a piece of paper and to write all you know about the 13 Ikarim on one piece of paper. It's like Lahavdil, when the kids come back after the summer and they spent the whole year learning, you know, American history, and to come back in September, you tell them to take out a piece of paper, write down everything you remember about American history, and it's just barely to spell U.S., maybe. After that, they're groping. A kid with a good memory might remember a couple of facts, but he doesn't have a mahalach. He doesn't have that feeling that he had, you know, 15 minutes before the exam. Now, the consequences of that are pretty meaningless, because whether or not you remember, you know, anything about the War of 1812 doesn't have much bearing on your present life. But as far as the 13 Ikkarim are concerned, and it's not just kids in fifth grade or in high school, if we would stop into any karla right now and get up and the Rosh Kol would give a clap, and to go through the 13 Ikkarim and to be able to have to speak to a young man who's been learning his whole life, and to have a clarity in the principles of Yiddishkeit, and what does it mean, and what are the principles of Yiddishkeit, and what does it mean to be a Jew, and what is the tafkid and the tachlis of a Jew in this world. So we understand that if a person's entire understanding or picture of Yiddishkeit is unclear, is confusing, then it's very hard to have a compelling reason to live that way. So for many Orthodox Jews, we just sort of go on and we go through the motions, we continue. There's not necessarily much of a hergish. There's not much of a feeling necessarily for what really Yiddishkeit is all about and what our tachlis and our tafkid is. We try to make it through from one Shabbos to the next, to try to do as few avers as possible, to try to do as many mitzvahs as we can, to be good boys and girls, and to hopefully, you know, at the end of the game, we pass go, and then the Rebbe Shalom says, okay, you can come here with your Zaydis and Bobbies, and we can meet the others and Mashiach, and live happily ever after. In that world, that's completely true. But to have an intense connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to feel a tremendous joy with Shabbos, and to feel a tremendous simcha with the mitzvah, and to feel a great excitement and privilege of being a Yid, being a Jew, not just historically, but in ruchnius and spirituality. If a person doesn't understand it, and it's not clear to him, then it's very hard to feel motivated to keep things properly. It's very hard. So we do keep things because we try to continue what our parents and grandparents before us, what they did. But that a person should feel a tremendous excitement and a hergish for that, it's very hard. It's a very hard thing. Unless a person knows what his goal is. Anybody that would come to, if any of us were running a business and we would take somebody to work for us, and we would expect this person not only to be honest in his work, but we would expect him to be very enthusiastic and hardworking. So we would try to explain to him the nature of the business, and you'd explain what is it that this business is about, and how does it work, and imagine if we would see the next day that in a very excited and motivated way, this new employee is running around doing certain specific jobs that are part of the bigger job. But it becomes clear after a while, as any employer knows, that this employee doesn't have a picture of the, doesn't have a feeling for the general mahalach of what this business is about. In other words, he might be able to focus on one thing or another thing, but he doesn't have a hergish for what the entire business is about. These things happen all the time. And the reason is because he doesn't understand. What is my tafkid? What's my tachlis? And if a person doesn't have, if he doesn't live in the Olam Borur, as we expect our children to be all excited about Yiddishkeit, we want them to be 100% connected. We don't want them to be like those other children. We want them to be 100%. But the question, have we given them a clear picture? Have we, together with their schools, given them an Olam Borur, a clear picture of the job, of what the job consists of? Not just do this and don't do that, but what it really means. A friend of mine mentioned to me years ago that for many years at the Shabbos table, he was saying to the kids about the halig of this and the halig of that, you know, the holy this and the holy that, and then finally, like when the kid was 18, he asked, what does halig mean? You know, what does it mean, halig? What does it mean, holy? And if you would ask each other now, what does it mean, holy? So everybody here would right away say Rashi and the Rabban and Kedoshim to you, and that's what you're thinking of right away, that holiness means to be separated from something that's not good, yeah? Everybody would say that right away, because everybody remembers that and knows that that's what holiness is. Could that be Is that what it means, the Heilig Baal Shem Tov? Is that what it means, the Heilig Rashi? The Heilig Shabbos? What does it mean, Heilig? The beginning of holiness is not to do something wrong. But what is holiness? And if our children and ourselves, if we don't have an Olam Bora of what the Tachlis is to reach holiness, how could you strive for something? How could you long for something if you don't really know what it is? How could you, if the boys don't know why they're learning, if they don't understand why are they learning, what's the tachlis of learning? What's the tachlis? Something that just happened, we had here, I said to my father I was going to mention it, I don't know who it is, because I didn't see who the boys were, that we had here eight people, we have a minyan for tomorrow, and there are eight of us, and there were two boys that said that they won't come unless it's 8:30 or later, but they won't come. They refused to come. He said, if you make it 8:30, we'll come. If not, we're not coming. I never heard such a thing in my life. There's a person here that looks like he's around 75, 80 years old. He's going to have to go looking in town tomorrow for a minyan. Because this boy said, I can't give up a half hour of my sleep. He went to yeshiva his entire life. He's not the... And my wife said a good thing. That if we would ask this boy, could you drive that elderly gentleman to the drugstore, to his doctor appointment, he would do it at 5 in the morning, right? I'm sure. If that gentleman would say to that boy, to those two boys, could you drive me to the doctor? Both of them would say, in a second, of course we would do that. But when you say, but they're not thinking that it's also an Olam HaChaver. They just don't feel like davening and getting up and whatever. They're on vacation, so. But of course it's an Olam HaChaver, because there are eight Jews that are going to have to go looking for a minyan someplace, right? They're going to have to drive somewhere. But the point is that if somebody doesn't have an appreciation and understanding of what it means to be a Jew, of the tachlis of a Jew. If you understand that, then you realize that it's hard to get up and daven Maariv tonight and saying, 30 seconds after you said that you're boycotting a minyan because it's 8 o'clock instead of 8:30. But this is what's happening to us and to our generation. They're good boys, they're good children, I'm sure they would do anybody a tayo. They just weren't thinking. But if someone doesn't get an Olam Borer, if someone doesn't get a clear picture of what's the Tachlis, and you don't live with that hergish of the Tachlis, so then how deep can your connection be to doing the things that you're doing? And is davening just a burden? Is davening just something that you schlep yourself through? And is Shabbos and Yontif and so on? Or is it something that you really care about and that is important to you? So what he's saying here is this is how the Ramchal begins, by saying that Yisbara v'yis ameizds. Yisbara means that it should become clear to a person. He goes on and explains. Nekuda zu shel choshech meinas miroiv sibur hayireyim es his kadmusam beruchnius. This point of darkness, not that we don't know intellectually, is there a tachlis to being in this world? And everybody knows that it's more important to serve Hashem than to get a half hour sleep. We all know that. But this nekuda, this point of darkness, is what prevents most of the tzibur. Look what he says. Nekuda zu shel choshech manas miroiv tzibur hayireyim. He's only talking about religious people. He's not talking about non-religious people. This nekuda of darkness prevents roiv tzibur hayireyim, most religious Jews, as his kadmusam beruchnius. It prevents them from progressing spiritually, moving ahead spiritually. Rubam kekulam yaidim say yisaidus lavaidus bayram. Most religious Jews know intellectually many of the basic principles of Yiddishkeit. They know them intellectually. They know, they heard about them, they studied them. Ulam chaser lahem es olam habor. However, what's missing is the olam habor, that feeling of a clear world, that clarity of that singleness of purpose. Like when a person, God forbid, if a person is in a difficult situation, even physically, the body secretes, Hashem Baruch made the body in such a way that it could secrete certain hormones, adrenaline, certain chemicals that can give a person, I remember reading years ago, not twice the koyach that he usually has, sometimes it could be between 10 or 20 times the koyach that he has. If God forbid any of us would hear right now that there's something, a child lost, is hurt or screaming, something happened, we'd be able to run 5 times, 10 times faster than usual. And if it was God forbid, it was our child, my child, it would be 5 times faster than that. But a person has, the kaychis that a person has are unbelievable. Now, why is it that usually it's hard to even drag yourself out of bed? But if you know that there's a child that's in danger, then you could, you know, jump over tall buildings in a single bound. Why is that you have such kaiches when because you love the child, any Jewish child you love, and you want to help, and it's an oilam bara to you, it's clear to you that you have a certain amount of time to take care of this, that you have to take care of something. There was somebody I grew up with, the Davin and Shtibel, we Davin and Shtibel together, that he was working on a Matzei Shabbos with something with an electric saw, and he cut off his finger by mistake. And the finger flew someplace in the room. I'm sorry, it's a gory thing, you know. But the finger flew someplace in the room, and he remembered, he heard that you have, I think, only something like a half hour, that if you don't have that, if you don't get that reattached or maybe frozen or something like that, then it can never ever be attached. You have only a small amount of time. There's a tiny little window of an opening of time to get that finger reattached. So he said, thank God, it worked out okay. And he was able to find it, and he took it to the hospital, and he drove himself actually to the hospital. But he said that he knew this, and he said the amount of time, I don't remember what it was, it wasn't even half an hour, it was less than that. And he said that he didn't know where it went in the room. It went zoop, and it flew off someplace, his finger. And the first instinct is to sit down to cry and to mourn over the loss of a part of your body. But he didn't have time for that, not even to go screaming, looking for help or for his wife. He knew he had to find his finger. So he said he was bleeding all over, but the koiches that he had, he said he started throwing over tables and lifting up heavy machines that he had over there, and moving over a refrigerator and a dryer. It was in his basement, in his workshop. And he found it behind, it flew behind something, he found it. He said that it would take him and three friends to move over any of those things on a regular day. We understand that he had a very clear task before him, and that was saving his hand, his finger. And it was an olam borer. And when a person lives in the olam borer, in a clear world, then he has kaiches, and he has a hergish, and he has the ability to accomplish infinitely more than he's accomplishing when he's lacking that olam borer. So he says, ulam chosel hemes olam haborer, chosel hemes ha shiyas barer shel hamesiyas Yisrael. This is what the Mesiyas Yisrael begins with. The foundation of saintliness, of righteousness, and of simple and pure service of Hashem, who she is barer, it should become clear to you what your obligation is in this world. Becoming clear to you doesn't mean in seventh grade, it doesn't mean in seminary. Becoming clear to you means that you live with that clarity every moment of your life. She is barer, that's the yisbarer shel hamesil sishar. Lekach ein yidiyosam hefeches lechias mamashes. If you don't have an olam borer, so then the fact that you know something does not become a chias mamashes. It doesn't become something that gives you chias. It doesn't live with you. I'm sure many of you know the famous maaseh that Reb Shalom Shadron told over. I was talking about a child, God forbid, in danger. So Reb Shalom told a maaseh that there was once a little boy in the neighborhood in Shari Chesed who got hurt. He hurt himself badly. And it happened that Reb Shalom was over there when the child got hurt. You remember this? And Reb Shalom picked up the child and started running down the block to go find a doctor, something, some help. The kid was badly hurt. And Reb Shalom, the tzaddik, was running with his baby. And there was a bubby there from the neighborhood that was looking out the window and screamed at Reb Shalom, daigen, zayn gut, Reb Shalom, zayn gut. She thought it was Reb Shalom's ainikel. Right? She thought it was Reb Shalom's ainikel. And then she looked the second time, she saw it was her grandson. And then she started to scream, and she came running out there, pulling off the tichel, you know, yelling, crying, gewalt, gewalt. So Reb Shalom said over the maise, from my ainikel, was good enough to say, daigen, Reb Shalom, zayn gut, Reb Shalom, from my grandson. Oh, but for her grandson, that wasn't a teretz, zayn gut, it's going to be okay. You understand? When a person feels an olam borer, this is mine. And it's clear to me. So he says, L'chein, L'kach, L'kach, Eini diyasam hefeches l'chiyas mamashis, Eini diyas sichlam chaya etzlam b'tzur m'chashis t'midis. You might know something intellectually, but it doesn't live with you in a tangible way. It doesn't change your life. The fact that you know something doesn't necessarily change what you're doing or affect what you're doing. when that knowledge is something which is not an olam bor, it's just some sort of a hazy, complicated, confusing picture of what Yiddishkeit is about and what we're supposed to be doing in this world. Al kol adam levar alay ba'efin mesuda shlav acha shlav es chavasa balama. The essence of being a Jew, and we could try not to think about it, but the essence of being a Jew is to clarify in the course of our lives, one step at a time, chavasa balama. It should become clear, and we should live with that, and it should be clear, we should think about it. What's my tachlis? What's my purpose in life? Bira gomer, with absolute clarity. And this goes back to what I was saying on Shabbos. It doesn't mean somebody else's responsibility in life, because each and every person has their own inyan. All of us have the same Torah mitzvahs, but each person has something else that he has to work on and has to become clear to a person over the course of his or her life, to think about it and to wonder and to work on this. What is my personal chayva? What does the Baruch Shalom want from me, from my ma'isim, my actions, my dibur, my words, my machshavas? What's the tachlis? He says, and this, a person has to work many months. It takes more than months. A person has to work on this throughout his life. Until it begins to become clear to you, what is your responsibility in life? And again, to live with that. He said it would be a good thing for a person to keep actually a written diary, a record of this. Like we saw, like I mentioned a minute ago, Reb Shalom Shadron, after Reb Shalom died, they found in his drawer, they found among his things, he had hundreds and hundreds of little tzetlach, little pieces of paper, with different kabbalas, different things that he wanted to do and he wanted to accomplish and things that he felt he had to work on. So it's a very, very special thing for a person to even put it in writing. La'acha, then the next part, La'acha shekim ha'odam b'nafshay is how she is barish la'amchal. After, again, doesn't mean that we can never finish this, but when a person is already in this parasha of working on that first level of yisbara, that your world should be a clear world, and your tachlis, your responsibility should be something which is clear to you, and you know what your job consists of. So after that, now that's an interesting word. He says she is bara v'yisames etzel ha'adam machevasa ba'alamai. Yis'ames is from the word emes. Emes means true. I guess we would say in English, I don't know how the translators translate this in the Sharm, but I think maybe to affirm or to confirm something. When something is true, like, so you know that you're scheduled, your flight is scheduled to leave at 11 o'clock in the morning, and you call to confirm the flight. It means you want to be mis'ames. It's something which is true. You just want to make sure that it's true. You mis'ames it, right? I think I told you a few years ago that once Rabbi Nelson Breslover was offered a position to be a Rav in a very, very chashuv city. Rabbi Nelson was a huge Talmud Chacham, a huge Goyim, and unbelievably poor. They were terribly poor, and his Rebbetzin in general was not happy about his whole thing with Rabbi Nachman that he came to, the whole chassidus thing, because her husband was offered very chashuv jobs, and he kept on turning them down because he wanted to stay with Rabbi Nachman. So finally he was offered this huge position in a big city, and Rabbi Nelson couldn't take anymore. His wife and the was screaming all the time in the poverty. So he came to Rabbi Nachman, and he asked Rabbi Nachman, he told him which shteller, and he explained to Rabbi Nachman, and he asked Rabbi Nachman, should I accept this shteller, this job, as a Rav in that city? So Rabbi Nachman thought for a few minutes, which for us is like a few lifetimes, right? And Rabbi Nachman said, yeah, you should take it. So Rabbi Nelson said, Bemis, Rabbi. He said, really, Rabbi, truthfully? Rabbi Nachman was quiet again, and he thought, and he said, Be'emes. Yeah. Then Rabbi Nelson asked him, Be'emes la'amita, Rabbi? Truth of truths, Rabbi? So Rabbi Nachman was quiet now for a few moments, and he said, Nein. No, it's not the truth of truths. There's something that's called Achias Ames. It doesn't mean like, Stam, it's true. It means there's no other possibility. There can't be anything else. It's not just, like, there are a lot of things that are true. in September, or even now, there are boys that are fighting. Who's going to do the Yankees or the Mets? The Yankees or the Mets? So you'll have somebody that'll say, if you have sons, then this might be an Indian that you've heard of, or husbands. I don't know if they probably are grown up by now. But this is an Indian among New Yorkers that's been going on for many years, Yankees and Mets. So I remember that when I was a while back in the 60s in Yeshiva, so there was a fight going on in the Rebbe, and the Rebbe came in and he heard the boy, this one was saying the Mets, this one was saying the Yankees. So the Rebbe said to this boy, he was a Mets fan. He said, "Are you sure that you speak so strongly about that team? Are you really sure that they're the best team and that they're going to be better than the other team?" So the boy said, "Absolutely, Rebbe." So the Rebbe said, 100% sure. He says, how much are you willing to pay for that? And how much are you willing, what are you willing to do for that truth? What are you willing to sacrifice for that truth?" So then everybody starts to laugh, you know, it's a whole different issue. You could talk all you like. And you could say something is true, that the Mets are better than the Yankees, or the Yankees are better than the Mets. But Yis'ames is something else. If Yiddishkeit is missing the Yis'ames, it means the Emes La'amita. So he says like this, Inyan Ha'imutz Eitzel Ha'adam. What does that mean? To confirm something. Inyan Ha'imutz Eitzel Ha'adam, She'yochush Hizdahus Gemura Im Hadavarim. That means when you identify completely and absolutely with something. That's called imut. In modern Eretz Yisrael, they call that imut. We call it atshiyas ames. When it's emes, of course, you always said it was true. But if you identify with this 1,000,000%, now you know that there might be people that have been learning Torah on a very deep level, all kinds of fancy things for 20, 30 years, but it could be there's a Jew that didn't learn as much, didn't have such opportunities, but when it comes down to it, his Yiddishkeit could be in a way that's more confirmed than the other one. So he says, "Shiyochus is dahus gemur im advarm," to identify totally and completely. In other words, that I can't imagine living without this. That's what it means to identify. The same way that we can't imagine living with. I said to my daughter when she had the baby, I said, "Isn't it? You know the baby for an hour, but isn't it true that you feel like you don't even know how you were able to live your whole life without knowing this child? Right? That's how you feel. That's because there's such a shefa that Hashem sends into a mother." That the mother, even before the child is born, identifies so unbelievably, so completely with the child, that she can't see herself as having a separate life anymore. She's totally, totally bound with that child. That's what it means, yis'ames. To identify, to confirm, it means not just that you know intellectually that something is true. It means she yis'ames. Even if you know that, even if you have a clear picture of what your responsibility is, the question is, how deeply do you identify with that? That's what it means. The Ramchal says, "She is ames etzel ha'adam." So he says, "She yochush chibur im advarim, she yargish shahadvarim ena begeder chiddush klal ela milsa de pshita." Meaning, it's so obvious to you. You identify with it so completely that that you can't imagine anything else. It's a milsa de pshita, which means it's so totally obvious to you that this is how it has to be, and it can't be any other way. You can't even understand somebody thinking differently than that. You can't understand how it's possible to think differently. Zu nekudas hisamtus. This is called atshiyas ames etzel ha'adam. Emes zu metzias. This emes is a metzias. It's the reality. And it's a reality that's so completely, absolutely clear to you and real to you that there can't be anything else. Kol davishen noigeid es hametzias mugda kesheker. Anything that goes against this metzias is mugdar kesheker. You see it as being an outright lie. Anything that goes against this emes that is not, that is clear to you, anything that is different from that is a sheker. It's a falsehood. Let's turn the page, let's finish this paragraph. Kol shlav ushlav b'avaydas adam. Every single step in the avoid of a person in this world, alav lochush, he has to feel. Shazumitzias gemur. It's not just an idea, it's not just a concept. One has to feel that it's absolutely essential and necessary. It is absolute truth. Moshekach ro'ui. Not that this would be, this is the right thing to do. This is the right thing to do. Rav Dessler, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, spoke about this once. I might have mentioned it some years ago. You know how inside of our heads we hear things in different ways. Sometimes you hear yourself saying, I must do this. Sometimes you hear yourself saying, I should do this. Sometimes inside your brain it's, I could do this. Or wouldn't it be nice if I did this, right? And it makes a very big difference. If a man wakes up in the morning and he looks at the clock and he knows that there's a shiur that he has to go to, that he should go to, and he hears it like, and in his head he says, I really should get up. Sometimes he doesn't use the word I. He said, sometimes it comes out like, you really should go to this shiur. That's a way of separating yourself even more, right? When you identify with something, you're at least courageous enough to say, I. But when you really are afraid to identify, you say, you or he. This way, I'm already detaching myself from responsibility. When a person knows that something must be done, he hears it inside of his brain, and it's the absolute truth, I must. Not, you should, or this would be a good thing to do, or this is something which is a suggestion that Hashem makes. When they came to the Kotzke's room and the Shamas screamed that, the Shamas came in and said, Rebbe, there was a Yid that just ran away with the Rebbe's life, with their candlesticks, because there were a lot of people staying in the Rebbe's home to wait for a bracha, and the Shamas came in and said there was a Yid that just ran off and stole the candlesticks. So the Kotzke said, that can't be. So the Shamas said, well, it can't be. It just happened. So Shama said, why can't it be? Because it says in the Torah, Lo Signaif. It says, don't steal. That's a very, obviously, it's a very sad story, because we know that Amai said it was stolen, right? And there are Nebel Jews that steal. But what's important about the story is the way that the Kotzker learned the Pasuk Lo Signaif. How do we learn the Pasuk Lo Signaif? Hashem is saying, don't steal. Kindlech, be good children. I don't like you to steal. It's a bad thing to steal. So when it comes to something which is very small, 100%, when it comes to something in business or on documents or papers or taxes, then it's already more of like a suggestion. How did the Kotzke hear it? When the Kotzke saw Leisignaif, it meant to him, there is no stealing. Can't be. Leisignaif means there's no such thing. I mean, by mistake, a person could do something wrong, but intentionally, it can't be. So therefore, he understood it must be some misunderstanding, because it can't be. In the Kotzke's mind, when it says in Torah Leisignaif, it's not a suggestion that Hashem is saying merely, I would like you not to steal. Leisignaif means Leisignaif. You can't do it. It's impossible to do it. Ad kedei kach, is it possible for a person to have such imut, such a confirmation of the truth in his avodas Hashem, that he can't even imagine anything different? The Shamas, by the way, said that after he walked out, he didn't know what to say, and he told the Rebbe, and that's the Rebbe said, and sorry, but there was no leichter. But he said that for 16 years after that, anytime he heard somebody talking about something that was stolen, he would go and throw up, he would vomit. Ad kedei kach did the Rebbe sear into his brain that lesson of Leisignaif, that he says after that wore off a little bit, but for 16 years, when someone told him that there was a Yid that stole something, it made him physically ill. Because when he heard it from the Kotzke, and the Kotzke said, Lo Signaif, it can't be. It's Achias Ames, Eitzel Adam. That's when something is confirmed, where it's so absolutely true to you that it can't be anything else. Not Shekach Roi, Tzoruch, Muchach, Linhoi, Golas, this is what I should do, it's nice to do, it's proper. This is it. There's the Metzias Havruah VaYichida. There's nothing else. This is all there is. If we call Shlila LeEmezu, anything that contradicts that truth, Hibchinis Dimyon, It's just a fantasy. It's a delusion. The shlilas hametzias. It's the opposite of reality. It's just unreal. It's not real. Rakesher ha'odem mekayim ba'atzmei es hashiyas barer v'yis ames. When a person comes to this madrega, which is the tachlis of our lives, that our Yiddishkeit should be lived in a way of yis barer and yis ames, that it should become clear and true. Rak oz yetaykif amiti lavadasa. Then he will see the true, he will feel true power, strength, and energy in all of his avodas Hashem, when he's able to have that yis barer and that yis ames. This, I believe, is a very, very appropriate introduction to the Sefer, even though he didn't write it, the Teres HaKdama. So, Bez Hashem, next Tuesday at 9 o'clock, please bring the Sefer, and we'll begin the HaKdama together.